Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Librarian is In, the New York Public Library's podcast about books, culture, and what to read next. I'm Gwen.
And I'm Franke.
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 Francois.
Francois, because I always make up a name or say a different name because I hate saying Frank.
Frank.
It's like unk. It's like the unk thing.
I think you should start going by Francis. I think that would sweet. It would be very dignified.
I used to hate
dignified.
That as a kid, but now I sort
really?
Of do. Some people call me Franklin, just jokingly. Anyway.
I can't think of any currently famous Franks.
Frank. Hello, you're sitting across
I know, from right? Present company accepted. Okay, so.
So, hi, everybody. Books, culture, and what to read next.
Right, that's what we're going to talk about today. And then in our next episode, stay tuned, we're going to announce our summer reading challenge for each other. And it's
yes.
going to be cool.
Oh, should we, which will be a short.
It will be a short episode next time
yeah,
for Memorial Day, so you can go do all your fun outdoor activities.
But next yes. will be the summer reading challenge announcement.
Correct.
To be then a book that we'll each read, recommended by the other.
Correct.
To be discussed later in July.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm excited for that.
Me too.
Also, where were you last night?
I
know, but the listeners don't.
What a good setup. Where yeah. were you last night,
Where were
night,
you
Gwen?
Last night?
I was at the Bernstein Awards.
And how drunk were you?
I was having a very nice time at the Bernstein Awards with the producer, among other people. And
I was not invited.
Were you not? I could have taken a plus one. I should have
Whatever.
Taken you as a plus one.
It's fine.
Aw, next year.
No, it's okay.
I'm going to be on the committee again next year, so I'll take you as my plus one
okay.
next year. Okay, so the Bernstein Awards are an award for long-form investigative journalism. You may remember that I have talked about a lot of these books on the show. We talked about Janine DiGiovanni's The Morning They Came for Us, which was incredible. And they announced the winner. Do you want to know who the winner is?
Yes.
You paused. Are you sure?
Yes, I do.
Okay. It was Jane Mayer for Dark Money.
Oh.
Which is an
incredible
book.
So you had mentioned all of them. There are
yes.
five nominees.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Money, Janine DiGiovanni's mm-hmm. The Morning They Came for Us. What were the other three?
Castaway by Charlotte McDonald Gibson, which is about refugees from five different countries. Another Day in the Death of America, which is a book about gun violence
yes.
by Gary Young. And Pandemic by Sonia Shaw, which is about the spread of infectious diseases.
Right. And so Dark Money is about what again?
Dark Money is about billionaires on the right of the political spectrum, the Koch brothers and the DeVos family, and a lot of incredible investigative work about the way that money flows into politics in this country. It's a very sobering read. I actually weirdly listened to the audiobook of this when I was on a very long car journey.
Weirdly.
Yes. And for some of it, my husband and son were asleep in the car and I was like listening to this book while like driving into the night. It's not very hopeful. None of the books on the list this year were very hopeful. But it's the work that she did to assemble this thing is unparalleled because these people do not want journalists writing about them.
Right.
They really, really don't. And she did it, I think, very bravely and very succinctly. And it's an incredible work of journalism. I highly recommend it. That's Dark Money by Jane Mayer. And also, if you are interested in learning more about that book and all of the finalists straight from the words of the authors, we have these really, really good podcasts that were original interviews with the authors of all the books. And they're amazing. I actually had read all of the books by the time I listened to these interviews, and I still learned so much. They were so detailed and so good, and he asked amazing questions of them. So I haven't listened to the whole Jane Mayer one yet. I've listened to part of it, but I can't wait to hear the end of that too.
Well, because way back when you mentioned the Bernstein Committee and that you were on it and the books that were nominated, the one that jumped out at me at the time, now, of course, they all do, but the one that jumped out at me at the time was The Morning They Came for Us mm-hmm. by Janine DiGiovanni. And that's the book I actually read for today. And I didn't, when you emailed me, when I checked my email this morning and saw that you had been to the Bernstein Committee, I was like, oh my God, award ceremony. Mm-hmm. I was like, what perfect timing, because I was coming in with this book in mind. Plus, I assigned it, so to speak, to our book discussion group.
Oh, that's right. You said you were going
to
do
in the library,
that.
Which is this Thursday, which I ordered a bunch of copies. The library kindly got more copies. So that's the book I read.
Oh, cool. It's funny because at the awards last night, Jean Mayer was the only one who was actually there. And usually all of the nominees, are invited. But I think a lot of them, like Carrie Young doesn't live here and Sonia Shah's in India for 6 months writing her next book. And Jean Mayer made this joke that was really cute and self-deprecating where she got up. And one of the first things she said was like, I feel like a real slacker because all the other four are like off doing important journalism and I'm here to accept this award. So
is that just coincidental?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And she's New York based.
Because obviously,
I think all the rest of them are not.
You had decided a while ago who the winner was, right?
We don't decide who the winner is. So the library committee puts forth these. So the way that it works is that we try to read, I think we read like 100 books. We, as in different librarians and people on the staff here. But then the committee puts forward our 5 favorite books from the 100 that we've read. And then a committee of journalists decides every year. And I think it's a set committee, at least the man in charge of it, I think, has been doing it for a long time. But they read the books that we consider the finalists and then they pick the winner. We didn't know the winner.
Oh,
until
I see.
Yesterday.
So you narrow the pool down to 5, right. And then the journalists pick the winner.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And some of those decisions were really hard too. Like there was a book I think I've talked about on the podcast before called One Child by Mei Fong, which was, I thought it was an incredible book, and it didn't make it because there's so many different things to consider in the mix of stuff, like the relevance and why the book is being written now and if it's one of the most pressing issues today. And so it's an interesting process, the sort of weeding down process, because a lot of the books that don't make it are incredible works of journalism.
It's not arbitrary per se, but it is opinion and point of view and an element of luck when you do best lists. I mean, I've been on certain different committees where you do that. And when you're talking about the books amongst the committee, you realize what a crapshoot sometimes it could be. It's just like, you know, whoever, you know, can articulate better about what the book they like. It's, you know, there's room for everybody. But we love lists and we love like best lists. And so, you know, it's a good thing, ultimately, totally. But it also says a lot about how we sort of, you know, want to make lists and best ofs. And when, you know, in some ways there's no best of. You know,
I'm really glad that our part in this, that the library's part in this, is only putting forward 5 best and not having to consider the one. And it's the same with the best books for kids and teens list that we have at the end of the year. That like, it's so nice to not have to put your finger down on one book.
Yeah.
I would have a really hard time with that. It's the whole concept of having a best of list is really tough, right? Because our whole shtick is like the right book for the right reader,
and no
my
shame.
Best book isn't your best book, and that it's all different. So it's hard to sort of wrap your brain around that. So I like that you get a range and not just one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I said, the Dark Money, the winner, like money, God, follow the money. It's like reading about economics. It's always so interesting. It's sort of like really digs deep to where the power really is. Apparently this book talks about that.
It does. But it's super relevant right now.
Like, and also I was going to say about the Bernstein family, it's like to give money to long form nonfiction journalism is sort of amazing because it is important. And I don't read a lot of it, enough of it. I mean, I've always said, and I've said this on the podcast, like I tend to shy away from nonfiction in some ways because oddly, I look at nonfiction as not being the truth, whereas I look at fiction as being the truth because in fiction, there is a God, an all-knowing, all-smart, real deal God, the author, who gives you all the stuff that you need to know for that world to understand it. So like you get a work of fiction, it's like everything you need to know about that world is in there. When you read a book of nonfiction, as unbiased or as striving as the author or journalist tries to be, they're one person with point of views and biases that you don't necessarily know possibly when you're reading it. Plus the facts of the world they're writing about could be many and varied. You know how books come out about certain subjects and then 2 years later, new facts are revealed. And so I always shied away because I felt like I could never really know the truth in a work of nonfiction, oddly.
Interesting.
Because I feel like, you know, you just can't know. Also, it's
that's
just
a
not,
good
it's
point.
Not my
I never
proclivity.
Thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I get very, like the book I read that was one of the nominees, The Morning They Came for Us, Dispatches from Syria by Janine DiGiovanni. I shy away from it, politics and war, because it always confuses me about how things start, and how they get going. Like this book is basically, the subtitle Dispatches from Syria is Janine DiGiovanni, a journalist, seems to really feel the need to go to hot spots around the world and in the past, like, and really sort of find out the people on the front line or the civilians, what's happening with them. That's sort of her point of view. And she certainly has a need, as she says, to, and she says it sounds corny, but it's so profoundly true, to give voice to those people who are in many, many, many serious ways suffering the ravages of the war in their country. So in Syria, you know, I'm sure there are many listeners who are far more articulate about the situation there than I could be, is undergoing a civil war between the long-term government, Bashar al-Assad is the president, and he's been president of Syria since 2000, 30 years prior to that, his father was. And the rebellion, so to speak, I guess, is challenging that government to try to be a little more democratic. They want to bring a little more of the democratic principle to Syria. And it just escalated and still going on. So a lot of her dispatches, Janine DiGiovanni, in this book are just horrible, horribly painful to read. I almost, you know, I was going to do a, not a spoiler, but like a sort of like, if I don't want to make, I don't want to make light of any of this. It's just a, and I'm not, it's just a way of trying to understand. Like when you read the book, you know, suffering is suffering is suffering is suffering. And torture, my God, it's like, what did you feel? What did you remember? What did you feel about this? Or think about this?
It's incredibly sad and incredibly, the word present keeps coming to mind, that like this is happening now. You're not reading a history book. You're not reading about
something.
That's
why I wanted to read it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not something that happened 50 years ago the way that you're, you know, I think a lot of us are used to framing wars as something that happened in the past, even though wars are going on constantly all around us all the time. Like we think about World War II and we think about Vietnam and those things feel really far away. I mean, American war specifically, but even wars in other places, even though you know intellectually that they are happening and you're reading headlines about them all the time and you read about, you know, children who were born 15 years ago or never born into a world where a major conflict wasn't going on, it feels distant. And maybe that's a like self-protection mechanism, is that it's safer and easier to read about things that are over, or quote unquote over. And the war in Syria is raging all the time. And I thought that she did an incredible job of sort of being a bridge between the cultures too, that she talks a lot about herself in that book and is not a sort of dispassionate journalist. And really brings you into it. Like, there is no flinching and there's no looking away from when I think all the time about that scene in the apartment with the mother. The apartment has no power and the mother has a bunch of young children and one of them doesn't have any shoes and it's freezing outside. And she's like, well, we have to go get food. Like, and this sort of numbness of their everyday lives. And also the other thing that I thought the author did incredibly well was to describe how these people were just like us, that they were, these are not people who were born into a place where they felt threatened every single day. It's not like 15 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago, they were living in daily fear of their lives the way that they are now. And that really hit home for me too, that like, it doesn't allow you to sort of other people the way that I think you often want to other people in a situation like that.
I mean, and you're right, when you say that the author, Janine DiGiovanni, talks a lot about herself, it's in no way narcissistic or self-centered.
No.
She actually does what I talk about a lot, too, is she tries to figure out, she tries to let you know where her emotions are in this. Because, like I said before about bias and opinions, she sort of tries to locate herself for us. So it's not like pretending to be dispassionate, because no one can ever be dispassionate, especially in that situation. But it's certainly not all about her.
No.
And she does acknowledge that she's a human being involved in this and has a certain inclination to visit these places. Like she talks about, I've read actually, that she was going to be a fiction writer and she was at the Iowa Writers Workshop.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she came upon investigative journalism by seeing a picture, a horrific picture from some strife somewhere in the world. And someone had said to her, you know, they need those voices need to be heard. And she just sort of couldn't turn back. She just sort of clicked. Something clicked with her about how mm-hmm. she had to investigate these horrible situations and give voice to the people suffering mm-hmm. them. And I forgot what I was going to say. You were saying something.
That she's kind of like the bridge between you and the subject matter.
Yeah.
So I know her writing is super incredible, and I know you found this book really affecting and moving. Is there a passage that you could read to us to sort of show people how her voice works?
Yeah, because we could talk forever about this subject. It just keeps getting larger and larger, personally and globally. But yeah, best to bring it back to her voice.
Yeah, because it really, I do think her voice is really unique in the way that she sort of weaves her own personal experience into it. So yeah, what part did you pick?
So she just has a brief chapter here when she's arriving in the town Aleppo in Syria. And she says, "By the time I arrived in Aleppo, every neighborhood was now a fiefdom, dictated by political survival and black market criminality. The people were caught in the middle. It wasn't clear who was in control of Bustan al-Khazar that week. In August, it was Arar Surya, one of the city's largest rebel brigades. No one knew who was in charge on the day I arrived." And then just briefly, she's staying with a family at one point in that town, and she talks about the mom and the kids, and she says, "She made us tea and spoke of the children. When they wake up at night and want a glass of water, you can't give it to them," she said, squatting on the floor and pouring the tea into dirty glasses. "When they wake up at night and want to go to the bathroom, they can't. When they wake up at night and ask me to stop the bombs, I can't do that either." Yeah, so I don't want to disrespect this book and say we have to move on, but I hate to forget that term, move on. It just feels like we should talk about it forever. But
I think that gives you tough. A good idea, though, if that's a book that you want to read, right? Like, it's a really important book. I'm really glad that I read it, and it's also really hard. So I think those are two perfect passages that you picked out to sort of show exactly how the book works. And would you recommend that book? I think I would recommend that book.
Do you feel that other people would get benefit from reading it? I have. And some people like back away from me. They're mm-hmm. like, no, I don't want to go there.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. We're moving on to the absolute.
Even though
that's
a dumb term, not moving on. We're just stopping for this moment.
We're stopping. And we're about to give you whiplash with the level of subject change here. Because I'm going to recommend a YA romance novel that will help you forget that the real world exists because you want to go and live in this world instead. It is called The Upside of Unrequited by Becky Albertalli, who also wrote Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda, which was so good. This book, I think, is even better than that one. I don't know how this woman is doing this. Her ability to capture teens' voices in a really, really authentic way, I think, is so incredible. I totally love it. So this is, I'm finding it very hard to be objective about this book because there's a lot of YA books that I think like, oh, I would have liked to have read that as a teenager. This might be the first YA book I've ever read where I was like, that was necessary for me as a teenager and I did not get to read it. And I'm very sad because it is so, I can't get away from the word authenticity. It's so authentic. Like, it's just, she's funny and the relationships are so crystal clear in your mind. So it's the story of these two twins and their two moms and their little brother and their first sexual relationships, their first crushes. The kind of deal is that there's two twins and one of them is a lesbian or thinks she might be a lesbian and the other one is a larger girl who has had like 20 something crushes on all of these different boys, but has never found the like nerve to work up to telling them. And so it's like the story of both of their like first real relationships. And it takes place in Tacoma Park, which is a really hippie suburb of DC, which I love and have several friends who live there and have spent a lot of time there myself. And I don't know. Becky Albertalli apparently lives in the South somewhere. Oh yeah. She lives in Atlanta. And I don't know, but she has spent some serious time in Tacoma Park because the details of it, it's like it talks about a cheesecake restaurant that like I've been to that's like a cafe. It talks about the farmer's market. It talks about the way that they walk from their house to the farmer's market. And it's so, every detail is so there. The setting of this book is just so perfectly rendered and perfectly described. And so it's not for super young readers. There's a lot of sexual stuff in it. There's a lot of language there's a lot of salty language in it.
How old are the characters?
The characters are, I think, juniors in high school.
Okay.
And it's just so great. It's so great. I am beaming like an idiot because
I love it so
much. So
is there an upside of unrequited?
There is an upside of unrequited love. Do you want me to read a little bit?
Yeah.
Yes, unrequited love, because it's about her crushes.
Right.
Okay, so another thing this book does great, and I would love to hear somebody in 10 years talk about this book, because there's a lot about technology in it. Like, texting and emojis are like a really sort of heavy part of the plot.
I wonder.
Okay, ready? Here we go. So this is one of the twins, Molly, I'm realizing I have to edit this slightly.
You can go beep.
Okay, I'll just say beep. Okay, so she's kissing, she's not kissing. No, she's texting this boy who she has a crush on and she thinks might like her back. And so, okay. So, what are you up to? I write and then immediately delete it. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to make this not sound like a booty call. I swear this isn't a booty call. Hey, Will, it's Molly. I tap send. Here's what I know. I shouldn't wait for a response. I should close the app, lock my phone, bury it in the zipper pouch of my bag, forget about it forever. I think messages from boys are like Santa Claus or Buzz Lightyear. They won't happen if you're watching them, but I can't help but watch. I have such perfect laser focus, you'd almost expect the screen to crack. A moment later, the screen refreshes and a new message appears, a tiny miracle right as I'm staring at it, as at my inbox. Oh, hey, what's up? A million competing thoughts. He wrote back right away and he asked what was up. Like, he's wondering what I'm up to, but not in a booty call way. Or maybe this is a booty call. Maybe this is exactly how booty calls work. At work, but I take a deep breath. I was wondering what you're up to later. 3 dots. Then the dots disappear. I think he's ignoring my question. Oh, God. But this is fine. Mortifying. But fine. I'm breathing. I'm okay. And it just goes on with the 3 dots and like what it feels like when you're waiting for someone to text you back and you see the 3 dots and then the 3 dots disappear and then you see the 3 dots. Oh,
you know
what? I just thought it was so wonderful. It's so funny.
I will never read that book. You know why? Because when you were reading that, I was like, I am so glad that those feelings are done. At least I think they are. I could be deluding myself, but I was like, ugh, I do not want to be a teenager with all that. Oh my God, I'm so glad it's over.
But it's actually like, it's not that angsty, this book. It's not.
It didn't
make me feel the real like, oh God, that some YA romance
but also
gets
just
really bogged down.
Proliferations of thoughts about like, is he interested? Is he calling me? Is he doing this? I mean, that's sort of exciting too. When you're angsty as a kid, teenager, but it's also exciting because it's so new. I guess that's what it is.
Right.
Now I'm just like, I would just text back and say, are we gonna get it on or not? Let's do it.
You would be booty calling.
Because I also resent that phrase, because booty call, whatever. It's like human interaction. Let's just call it a different kind of human. It's all human interaction. I'm not going to give it a label.
Okay.
And if there's attraction, there's attraction. If it works, it continues. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
You get a little nerve with that.
All the constrictions of being a teenager, it seems like you feel in some way emotionally the freest you ever have, but yet you're so prescribed because you're so want to be a part of or you're reacting against. But it is a much more rigid world in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want it to seem like a booty call because what? Sex is bad? Or well, just sex alone is bad?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I think that YA literature is so ripe for discussion.
Yeah.
Because there's so many firsts, and there's so many rules about the way that the world works that are different in a lot of places, right? Like, this world of this book and the rules about booty calls and the rules about texting and are you going to text back quickly are totally different than a book like, what's another book? Like The Hate U Give, where that's just like set in a totally different world with totally different problems and totally different characters, but they're still texting each other. And like that kind of stuff is still happening.
Yeah.
I think you've kind of hit on why. I think YA literature can be really, really great.
Because it is true. I mean, that's what I'm so glad is over.
Yeah.
Or somewhat over for me is that I don't have to feel the weight of my own fear. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're that young, it's like you're learning about the world, trying to find your place in it, trying to push the boundaries, but also terrified that the boundaries are real. I mean, and then as you get older, you can realize, you know what? They're not so real.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to matter.
Mm-hmm.
they were just societal prescriptions or your parents' own fears or your own personal bias. I mean, all sorts of different mm-hmm. things. But what's cool about being a kid, a teenager, is that it's everything seems so important
yeah.
and so exciting because you're discovering it for the first time. And the fears come in because you want to get certain things, you want to achieve certain things, you want to become certain things, so you don't know what the right resources will be for you mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that struggle, I'm glad, is done.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm just like, looking to the grave. What?
Oh my God. Oh dear. It's so much more fun.
Well, it's a somewhat of a relief. I hope we did, we didn't do justice to that book, but anyway.
To which book?
The Syrian book. Janine DiGiovanni. I mean, maybe, you know what? See, we can talk. I'm bringing it up again. I think it's time to go.
Okay.
Thank you for listening.
Do you have any non-book recommendations or we're just going to sign off?
Haven't we been talking for like 18 hours
it feels
straight?
Like it.
It's like
44
the...
44 minutes.
That's
let's,
a bad
let's
44
not,
minutes.
Let's save our non-bookers for the
okay.
next time.
We'll
I
save
think
them.
That's enough.
All right. Thanks for sticking with us, everybody. Even when the road is hard, it's still important to talk about things.
Oh, I love you, Gwen.
I love you. I still like talking to you.
Still?
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we will see you next week for a special mini episode about our summer reading challenge.
What do you mean still?
Bye.
Goodbye.